Hey, this is Christopher, and you are listening to Orphan Entertainment, the podcast dedicated to uncovering the golden nuggets out of the frozen tundra of public domain.
Woo-hoo.
Joining me, as usual, is the never frigid Lydia.
Oh, yeah, that's all that I got. Yep.
Hello, Lydia. How are you doing?
Oh, I think you can tell by the sound of my voice.
I think we can.
I'm doing remarkably well. Thank you very much. And how are
Excellent.
You, Christopher?
I'm doing very good. Thank you very much. I'm always excited to get together with you and discuss a fun film that we've discovered.
I am too. Now, I have to ask, are you – okay, and totally unrelated to anything orphaned, you've heard Foil? No. It's the other one. Oh, no. It's the Grammar song that Weird Al just released this week.
Yes, I did hear that.
You said you're doing good. Are you doing good or are you doing
well? I'm doing well.
I'm always doing well. I very rarely do good. Well, for other people. For me, I'm a little bit of a selfish person.
I took one of those quizzes and I am like 36% evil. So there you go.
Sure. You know, my brother once told me that I reminded him of an evil character in a particular TV show. You can message us on Facebook to find out which particular character my brother was reminded of by me. And I said, really, you think I'd be an evil person? And he goes, have you heard yourself laugh? I was like, yep, you got it. I would be evil. So,
good point.
But this week we're doing well, not good.
Yes, we are doing well.
And
thank you.
We have a gem of a film for you.
Yes, I think we do. Before we get into that, I do want to give you a little correction on something that I said last month concerning the Parsec Awards. I was under the impression that once the finalists are chosen, it's up to the public to vote. That was incorrect. I should not have said that. Winners are chosen by a panel of judges selected by the Parsec Award organizers. So thanks anyway. I'm sure many of you were just ready to click on vote.
But where are these judges and how can we bribe them?
Exactly. I know. There is still no word on whether, we're still waiting to see if we're finalists.
But you know what?
Still no word on that.
Being nominated is just a huge, huge.
It's a thrill. It is a thrill for me.
That's math.
Honestly.
Yeah. With an emphasis on the math. No, that is really very, very flattering. And we're so grateful.
I'm guessing we will probably have news by our next episode, so stay tuned. And, of course, check our Facebook page because that's where it's going to get posted.
Ooh, hey, and guess what? By the time that our next episode, not this one, is up, I'll be a year older. That doesn't mean that we're not going to post for a year. That just means my birthday is coming up. So if you want to say happy birthday to me, do it on
Gifts can be sent to Orphan Entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. No, but make sure you're checking us out on Facebook. We definitely love that.
I also wanted to bring up, and Lydia and I discussed this last time offline, but this month we will be introducing our rating system.
Oh my gosh, have we done that already? Oh, I'm so excited. I'm always
right
a
now,
little bit behind there.
What's that?
I feel like I'm always a little bit behind. You have all this fantastic news, and I'm like, really? I'm so excited.
Well, we
discussed
this.
About it. I remember talking about it.
So I figured now is as good a time as any. I think right now we'll keep it pretty simple, maybe just a general 1 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do this on the Othel scale.
What is the Othel?
Well, you've all seen it. You know that little Greeky Romany looking letter that looks like an O and an E after a horrible matter transfer experiment gone wrong?
I do. It looks like the fly recreated, but in letters.
Exactly. Well, that is the Othel.
Oh, my gosh. Well, in that case, I am ready for my Othel count.
Sweet. So I think we will go, what do you think, 1 through 5? I think that's what I said. I think that works best.
Like, if it's 4.5, it can be 4 Othels and a no.
There you go. So 1 is, of course, going to be like a sorry we brought it up. And 5 will be do not watch this.
Absolutely watch this movie. It's going to be fantastic. You'll love it. And if you don't, there's something wrong with you.
Now, I posted on the Facebook page that we were going to introduce this month, and I said that I might like to break down the films into kind of categories or rate them on some categories, maybe one of which might be watchability. Many of these films are, the quality of them can be a little rough, so maybe we could give a rating on that. Perhaps there's just a rating on enjoyment of watching the film or the entertainment value.
I think maybe we could even just come up with a unique category for each film. I mean, you know, if it's going to win in any category, what category is it going to win in? Great example last month would be the weirdness factor. I mean, that really could spring forth in last month's film. So
right,
we'll probably give you a couple of different ideas there.
But I have asked for any other comments and any other suggestions on that Facebook page. So do check out that post and feel free to put in your 2 cents worth.
And in case you didn't notice, we're pushing the Facebook today. That wasn't even planned, but it's happening.
Well, we've had it's a lot of fun. We have been getting a little activity. We've had a few new members, one of which from Norway. Did you see that?
I did not. Hello, Norway. I'm so happy you're listening. We'll come visit
Absolutely.
You sometime.
So we've got a listener in Norway. We've got a listener in Australia. I mean, how cool is that?
Well, I went.
We are truly international.
Now I feel like I need to get some of my New Zealand friends, my Kiwis out there, and I need to get a couple of Japanese friends listening too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
No, we could be in Asia, Europe, Australia, and the Americas.
That would be pretty sweet.
But that's, yeah, please check us out on Facebook. And if you comment, we will comment back. We're not those snobby people that don't want to talk to you.
Nope, absolutely not. I always feel bad when someone, I always feel bad if someone says something and I don't have, I really don't have anything to reply.
Oh, just poke me. Tell me. I always have something to say. We know that.
There you go. Before we get into the film, let's take a short break and play a little promo here. And when we come back, we will discuss The Frozen Limits.
Hammer Film Productions began in 1934, and after producing almost 200 films and television programs, the studio is still releasing and re-releasing new and classic film titles. 1951 Down Place is the podcast that brings you the story of the great Hammer films, one movie at a time. Here are your hosts, describing what Hammer means to them. First is Casey.
Hammer means the beautiful and glamorous women of Hammer horror, the engaging storytelling, and amazing period films.
Joining him is Derek.
Hammer means the incredible work of actors like Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, and even Michael Ripper. The gothic storytelling, the incredible music, and the set pieces.
And finally, here's Scott.
Hammer, that 1972 blaxploitation film starring Fred Williams. Love that movie. Hammer!
This boy has a lot to learn. Join our hosts as they make their journey through the Hammer Films catalogue and discuss each film with critical opinion, historical facts, production notes, and other information about these classic films. 1951 Down Place can be found in iTunes or their website, www.1951downplace.com.
Better not be the 2003 flick starring Adam Goldberg, the Hebrew Hammer.
1951 Down Place, the home of Hammer Films discussion.
Well, this month we are going to take a look at The Frozen Limits. This is a British comedy from 1939 starring The Crazy Gang, which consists of Jimmy Nervo. And yes, I agree, sci-fi, that is an awesome name.
I had like 4 different people just fly into my head when you said that, and then I forgot who they all were. Well, one of them was Neo, and then
Jimmy Nervo does sound like a character that you would find in like an animated film, a Disney film or something like that.
Yes, I had Astro Boy pop into my head.
Jimmy Neutron, Nervo. That's why.
Yes, Jimmy Neutron, thank you. I was having a moment there. That and Neo and, everything.
There you go. Also in The Crazy Gang, Bud Flanagan, which is a great comedy name right there.
Mm-hmm.
Teddy Knox, also a great comedy name.
My gosh. The comments. The comments that come to mind.
Yeah, okay.
But does anyone answer?
Chesney Allen and Charlie Naughton. The Crazy Gang was a comedy theater troupe that formed in the early 30s. They're very popular comedy team at the time. They were asked to do many Royal Command performances in their native England. The last one was in 1961, so they actually, in one form or another, they performed for many, many decades.
That, I mean, that's impressive alone. And you can tell from this movie why they were around for so long.
Oh, absolutely. They also did a few private performances for the royal family. So, yeah, very, very popular at the time. They did a total of 5 films, though theater was their thing. They did do some movies. The Frozen Limits is sitting right in the middle of them. Interesting bit of trivia, all their films were directed by Marcel Varnel, or Varnell, a French director famous for many of the British comedies of the time. And from there, I think we can probably... let me just start by saying this, just a general comment on the film, and I want to see if you felt the same way. I almost feel like we were coming late to the party on this one.
How's that?
Watching them and watching their routine, I felt like we were meant to know these characters already, which obviously we couldn't. But in the 1939, you know, they'd already done 2 films. They were very popular on stage doing their act. It was a little bit like if you had shown someone that had never seen an Abbott and Costello and they wouldn't know who they were.
They would kind of be a little confused. Well, I feel like, in a way, I absolutely agree. And in a way, I didn't feel lost coming into it. I mean, it takes a moment at first to kind of understand what's going on. But after the classic titles that you see in the 1930s movies, you pop into this carnival scene where you have these hula girls dancing. And opposite them are 6 guys trying to sing a song and get people drawn into their tent. And it's so obvious that everybody's interested in, of course, the hula girls, because it's these women in, you know, if I remember correctly, coconut bras and grass skirts dancing on a stage. And of course, who's not going to watch that over 6 guys in suits? So, you know, right away, you kind of get the idea that these are guys that are struggling to make it and they're just not, they're not getting it.
No, they're absolutely not. The crazy gang here that Lydia is referring to is actually in this movie called The Wonder Boys. They're not going too much of a stretch as far as what their roles are here.
No, I don't think so. Well, and they keep their actual names in the movie, their first names, all of them except for Jimmy Nervo retain their first names. So, you know, I think this is a case where we are expected as the audience of the time to just stretch our imaginations a little and say, okay, these are the real people and this is what they would really do. But this is a new situation they might be thrown into and we should just accept it.
Exactly. And I think that's where I was saying that I didn't know these people. I felt like there was a sense of familiarity that was expected of the audience.
Yes.
That, you know, wasn't there for me.
And I totally agree with that. But you definitely right away, I was immediately recalled to the Road movie, you know, with Bing Crosby and Bob Hope. You have these 2 performers, in this case 6 performers, that are struggling. They're having a hard time with it. They're doing the best they can. They've been kicked out of, you know, every bed and breakfast in town. And here they are trying to get people's attention across from a string of beautiful women dancing. So, you know, in a way, it's very familiar because we've all seen the story before. Yes, 6 guys is a lot to remember. And there were only a couple that really stood out to me that I could recall through the entire movie. But it's not an unfamiliar situation.
That was another thing that I found interesting is I'm so used to this smaller, sort of tighter groups where maybe you have really only 2 or 3. And to have 6 as your main characters was an interesting...
It was a cultural difference. It was almost a cultural difference because in the U.S., I think we're used to, you know, teams of 2 guys that kind of... Abbott Costello and, you know, Crosby and Hope and... who were the other 2?
Laurel and Hardy.
Laurel and Hardy.
The Three Stooges was maybe the Mac...
Darn it, yes. But yeah, there were, you know, we're used to these small groups. So when you see a whole bunch of guys that are all funny at once, it's almost, to Americans, it's almost a little bit off-putting just because we're not used to the size of it.
Almost a little overwhelming.
Yes, it is. It's a little overwhelming. That's a good, what a great word. What a great O word. Thank you, Christopher.
No problem. I did like in the film how they decided they had to start getting some attention. And they started seating the audience. That's one advantage of having a large group.
Yes.
They had 2 or 3 people. They had, I think, a couple people up on the stage doing a little routine. And they seated the audience with the rest of the gang. And out in disguises, you know.
Yep. Well, and this is the moment where, and at first I was kind of like, okay, struggling guys, there are six of them. I wasn't really sure if they were the main characters or not. And then you get these two guys up there and they start telling this joke. Oh my gosh, it's so lame.
Look, we're getting an audience. Come on, do your stuff before we lose them. And now they didn't get me. I'm going to give you on the outside a sample of that size-splitting, button-busting, indescribable, hilarious comedy with which we hope to incapacitate you on the inside.
And the price of admission is only one penny.
One penny.
You only get one customer in, the rest will follow.
We'll get them in, Jim. Ten. Come on, Penny. Funny joke. I say, Mr. Allen, do you mind if I ask you a conundrum?
I don't mind, Mr. Flanagan. I'd rather like you to ask me a conundrum.
Well, if a bomb fell in a field and the bull ate it, what would it be?
If a bomb fell in a field and a bull ate it, what would it be?
Yes.
I don't know, Mr. Flanagan. What would it be?
Abominable.
Top hole.
Awfully good. What funny fellows.
And the price of admission is only a penny. How can they do it?
Let's go in and hear some more.
Now, Mr. Flanagan, I have a riddle for you. This is jolly clever. What has eight legs and humps?
A quartet.
Well, you're wrong. It's two goats. Aren't they too delightful? I really must go and spend a penny.
I was like, I think that was the first time I kind of snorted. You know, and I suddenly kind of was like, okay, these are comedy guys. They're saying, we're going to make you, you know, we're going to do our best to make you laugh. And oh, we'll get people in. If we get one person in, then everybody will come in, you know, and they're starting to seize the audience. And you got somebody out there saying, oh, this is a great show. And it's obviously the guys dressed up, you know.
Exactly.
And that was kind of the moment where I was like, okay, now I understand what kind
of movie
it is.
I love the one spelly. Oh, I'll go spend a penny.
Yeah. Oh, really? A penny? Well, it's just a penny. Oh, for a penny, I'll go see that. Yeah.
Well, there's a little double entendre there too, because spend a penny in British slang is to have a pee.
Oh, dang it! I wish I got that. That's hilarious. See, okay, I have a couple more coming, but that's good. Thank you.
Oh, you're very
Thanks
welcome.
For letting us know that, Christopher. We've learned our Britishism for the evening. Thank you, folks, and good night. Now everybody can go spend a penny.
Well, this doesn't work out too well, as I guess the purveyors of this carnival come and decide they want the money that these guys owe them for the stage.
As I understand it, is it the stage? Now, I thought it was the guys where they were supposed to be renting, where they are supposed to be living. So
that could be.
One lady come up and she says, you owe me for where you stayed. And then also my daughter's been crying her eyes out. And I couldn't catch, this is the one part I couldn't catch, is which guy. I know it was the shortest one. But which one of it's the lady killer? So there's obviously a lady killer in there.
Yeah. Oh, of course. It'd have to be.
I have no idea which one he is.
No, I have no idea.
I don't know what his name was. And then, immediately after she leaves, saying she's going to bring the police, and a bunch of guys come up saying, you owe us money. And I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. But I kind of got the impression that it was rent.
Oh, it's very possible. Yeah, I did like – this is another thing I liked. And you kind of get the idea of what this film's going to be like, because the one guy, they start talking to these guys like, well, look.
I don't want to see your show. You owe me for this pitch, and I want my money.
Money? We haven't got his money, have we, boys? No. We haven't got your money.
No.
We haven't got any money's money. We haven't even got our own money, which we've never had.
Now, look here, either you pay your rent or out you go.
Listen, we don't come to your place to see out you go.
No, because my place is mine.
Well, this place is yours.
I say, can't you let bygones be gone by? Now, look here, I've had enough of all this. Either you pay me what you owe me, or my sons will get busy.
Listen, if we paid you what we owed you, we wouldn't owe you anything, would we?
No.
Well, therefore, if we don't pay you what we do owe you, well, have some sense.
That's right. In any case, no good you coming to us. We haven't got anything.
Very well, then we'll take what you have got.
Oh, but it's dead body.
They're like, yeah, and he's like, well, there you go.
Yep.
What? Well, the six ruffians, I guess, just don't take the advice of... of the Wonder Boys.
They don't have anything, and they say, well, we'll take what you have.
Exactly, which ends up being their nice white suits.
Which is, it kind of cracks me up. They're way too short on these guys, but it took me, you see it as they're finally walking away, these six guys, six huge guys in these white suits, and they kind of pan down, and the last guy's pants are like 6 inches.
And like the one guy, well, you come back here and I'll show you. And the other guy, you show any more and you'll get nicked.
Yes.
As he's standing there in his t-shirt and boxers.
Yes. This is, by the way, this is a movie of bad puns.
Yes, it is. Very much so. Well, next we see our gang, and they are in whatever it is they're staying in, their shack all together, having some fish and chips, when one of them discovers an article in the newspaper that had been used to wrap up their fish. And it's about the gold rush in Red Gulch, Alaska. Unfortunately, the date had fallen off the paper.
This is another one of those classic word gags where I love the English language. The English language is indisputably the most difficult language for people to grasp. And I've studied, I'm not bragging, I've studied three other languages. I don't have a firm hold on any of them. But every language I've studied, I've taught English to, in another country. And they hands down say English is the most difficult to understand because we have words that sound exactly the same that mean completely different meanings. And this is a great example. He says, at one point they say, where is it in America? And he says, oh, well, I'll take it up with a woman. And they say, what? And at some point he says, I'll take it up with a woman. Oh, I'll ask her.
Oh, yeah, Alaska. Alaska. Alaska.
Alaska.
Oi. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think even someone's like, oh, it's in Red Gulch, USA. What's USA? That's USA.
Hey, I totally forgot about that. Yes.
Well, they decide that they are going to make their fortune by going to this and finding some gold. They're going to quit this carnival routine, and they're going to go and they're going to find some gold, and maybe they can put on some shows to all these miners that are in this Red Gulch, Alaska. And somehow they don't have any money to get to Red Gulch, and I don't think we ever find out how exactly they get there, but they get there.
They break into a safe and steal the money.
Oh, that's right. My gosh, how did I forget that?
You know, it's a quick blurb. You kind of miss it if you look away for a minute to take a sip of your non-alcoholic beverage if you're under 21. Then you look back, but no, there's the moment where they say, "How much? Where does he keep it? He gets it in the safe." They have this just outrageous map where if they had taken 10 pounds and put it on Nelly that was 120 or 12 to 1, then they'd have 120. But oh, they could have put the whole 120 on her, and then they would have won 3,000 pounds. And of course they, it's all speculative, and they end up saying, "Well, we, promise we're not gonna. If we're gonna get there, we're gonna get there by honest means." And the next thing you see is them breaking into a safe. These are very obviously men of very high character.
Oh, absolutely. Well, they do manage to get to the United States. They're on their way to Red Gulch. They've got themselves their nice little traveling wagon, complete, blazing with the Wonder Boys on the side.
This cracked me up, too, because I was looking at it going, what are they driving? They've got this massive, huge coach, I guess it is.
Yeah.
All six of them piled on top and one horse pulling it.
Oh, it is a fancy coach. I mean, it is like all decked out. It's got like a spiral staircase in the back to get to the top.
This is, I think, what also one of my favorite lines in the whole movie.
What's that one?
They say, something to the effect of, we've been driving for days. Have we passed anything? Have you seen anything? And he says, I passed nothing but snow and ice since yesterday morning. And one of the guys says, nice cup of hot coffee will help with that. This is a movie where if you stop listening for 30 seconds, you will miss a joke.
Yeah, and I know I missed a ton. And I got to tell you, I think this is one, I don't know, where did you, if I can ask, where did you watch your copy?
I was watching this on YouTube, actually, and it was a pretty good copy.
Yeah, I would, I might recommend YouTube, too, because I did click over to the YouTube. I watched the one from Archive. And I found the audio to be wanting, and I know I missed a ton just because I had a hard time hearing all of it, especially with the accents.
Yes. Well, but even this movie is so packed. It's like it's like, for lack of a better analogy, it's like watching Saturday Night Live, but every line is a one-liner. So, it's hilarious, but it's almost like they need to pause between every joke because you're going to miss half of them. You cannot catch every joke on the first watch.
No, and I really wish I could have gone back and maybe done another watch, maybe with headphones and maybe watching it on YouTube so I could actually concentrate and actually hear it all.
And I think that's one where, like, the first 20 minutes or so, I was kind of going, this is just a vaudeville act. It's a hour and a half long vaudeville act, and I kind of got disillusioned with it at first.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I I was watching, and it's funny, but yes, you have to pay really close attention or you miss most of it. You know what's going on, but it's nothing new. It's nothing really exciting. If you've seen Road to the Yukon, you've seen a lot of it, not all of it, but, you know, a very similar story. But the jokes in it are just nonstop. And if you're not paying close attention, you miss most of them.
Yeah. Well, after offending some extremely offensive Native Americans, it was 1939.
Oh, my gosh. They decided to dress up as Native Americans to sneak through a Native American camp so that they don't get scalped.
Right, yes.
Of course that doesn't work.
Including dressing up a couple of them as squaws.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, the Native American chief decides once for his own.
Because everybody loves a man dressed as a woman.
Yeah. And didn't they even dress one of the guys up that they were going to scalp him. So they had like several wigs on him, and
yes,
they pretended
like two or three times. The other guy says, "I want to scalp him." No, you can't scalp him. He's ours. We're the only ones who can scalp him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just a mess, but they are fortunately saved by the entrance of the hero.
Tex O'Brien.
Hirana, Hirabana. Why I not know?
It's a lie. I don't know what he said, but it's a lie.
What? Are you English?
Behold, Captain Farquhar of the ARP.
And this is Baldy of the LCC.
And why these get-ups?
We are a theatrical company. When we saw the Indians, we got dressed up like this, hoping they'd let us through.
Actors, huh?
Yes. Doing a short tour prior to West End production.
You nearly started your farewell performance. They say you pinched their squaw.
She's no squaw. She's a he.
Yeah. You mean she's a man?
Yes, and I'll submit to any test to prove it.
You better let me deal with these fellas. Nankwa, Iroqua, why English? Lamoose.
Wachi!
Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Lex O'Brien's the name. I'm a trapper in these parts.
A trapper? Go on. I got a system of the traps. 1 and 2 at Clapton and 4 and 6 at the White City, haven't I?
Terribly nice of you to have done this for us and all that sort of thing, you know.
Well, that's all right, but if you'll take my advice, you'll be on your way while the going's good. Well, so long.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Nice of you.
Hello, Dex.
Goodbye,
Dex. Goodbye, Dex.
Charlie, I'm surprised that you come out of there. Charlie. We were just discussing the European situation. Come on upstairs. I've never known such a person for the company of the opposite.
Just one of many Brits pretending to be Americans that are in this film.
Yes. And it is worth noting that I went through the entire movie and got to the end before I really realized it by the credits that it was filmed on location in London.
Yeah.
So, or filmed in a studio in London. So, you know, in their defense, you know, in the 1930s, a lot of people spoke with a very refined accent, even if they were American. So you don't really notice. It's not inhibitive to the movie. But yeah.
No, it's not as bad. It's not as bad as some of the stuff that I've seen, like, even 20 years later, where there would be a British film or a British television show, and it was supposedly, it would have an American, and they would just immediately go into that ridiculous, "Well, y'all," you know.
I love watching, oh no, I'm choking. Wrong pipe. I love watching British shows where they're trying to speak like Americans. It totally cracks me. And you know, Christopher and I are both Midwesterners, so we both have that non-accent that you know, hear by the newscasters. But I love it when they kind of pick out a specific area of the U.S. and try and recreate it. They're always cracking me up.
Yeah,
but
it always seems to be Texas.
Well, I can't really say much about that, sir. I'm so sorry. I probably just alienated every Texan listening to us. To be fair, my family's from the South.
There you go.
Now I've got them back on my side.
Well, Tex manages to talk them out of trouble and sends them on their way. And they arrive at Red Gulch to find that it is pretty much a ramshackle town with just a crazy old man and his beautiful granddaughter.
I love this scene. I love this scene. I love it that, you know, he comes up behind him when they're standing in line at the box office. And then he says, "Oh, you got to knock louder. He's asleep." And then they turn around, they knock harder, and it's the same guy.
Yeah, he just keeps moving from room to room.
I love it. It's such a Wizard of Oz moment. It's so great.
Oh, really, very much.
I really do. I wish they would do stuff like this in modern movies, because it's such a simple gag, but it's so funny.
Yeah, it's really cute. And, you know, they start getting the impression that something's not quite right. I think the first building they try to knock on collapses.
Yeah.
And then, then they find the theater and they find the old man who is the ticket holder and the usher and the stage manager.
And he talks to the invisible crowd, which of course isn't there.
Right. And then I think that they go to leave, and of course he goes, he's also the stage driver or the taxi or whatever.
With the trolley. They're getting on a trolley in the middle of Alaska, and he
That they play along with this guy.
Yes, I love that they humor him.
To the point of like, no, hey, I'm not moving until you all sit down. So they all have to like this invisible trolley.
They all step over the lady in the theater. It is so funny. I love it.
Doesn't even one guy as he's passing the invisible white lady kind of like, ooh, like he was been goose.
Yes. Well, and the funny part is the old man does it. And then it's a mess. It's a hot mess in a great way. It is funny. I think this is where the movie starts to pick up. And then, of course, the old man says, oh, my granddaughter's coming, and everything else has been invisible, imagined. You know, he pulls the gun on them when they say they won't stay to tea. And then he says, oh, here comes my granddaughter. And they're all, oh, yeah. Oh, there is a granddaughter. And, oh, she's beautiful.
Yeah. And very real. Yeah.
And very real. In pants.
Yes.
And brown boots.
Well, she invites them all to stay. I guess they've got a big bunkhouse and a place for him to stay.
And here, I got to go back to you.
Oh, yeah.
They're talking about how crazy the old man is. It blows my mind every time I watch a movie from this era, even earlier, even a little bit later. We think we are the only generation that deals with specific issues, especially specific social issues. Issues, if you're British, issues is what I was trying to say. Christopher's like, oh my god, rolling his eyes. But I love, there's a gag in here, I gotta repeat it, because it's so interesting, and I don't mean this offensively, I mean this is seriously hilarious. He says, oh, my aunt used to check for fairies at the bottom of the garden, because they're saying, oh, this guy's nuts, he's, you know, talking to these invisible people. And this one guy says, oh, my aunt used to check for fairies at the bottom of the garden. And one of the guys says, oh yeah, she was balmy. And she says, nope, she was check. Or the other guy says, nope, she was checking up on my uncle. It's a gay joke.
Yes.
It's a gay comment in the middle of a 1939 movie. I about blew my lid. I couldn't believe it. And the fact that anybody that's thinking, oh, we're new, we're young, we're interesting, we've never had to deal with these issues before, go back and watch some of these movies. Go back and watch some movies from the 1930s, the 1940s. Listen to the dialogue and everything that you hear, you will be amazed. There's nothing new going on right now that hasn't been going on for decades. Yeah, technically a little bit of an offensive term. The fact that this is still, you know what? This is not new stuff. This is, I love it that they have these gags in these movies, and it tells you so much about the culture at the time. I hope that's not inappropriate. Again, no,
absolutely not. And you know, and I've said it before, and I'm sure I'll say it again. That's one of the absolute pleasures I've had of going back and watching some of his films to discover how not new most of our comedy or drama or whatever is.
In our life, our social issues, and you know, sorry to run a little bit off track with this. The thing is that I love to reference the original series of Star Trek. Go back and watch the original series of Star Trek, and it's a great example of how all of the same issues were existing during that time.
So during a fantastic dinner that, or a meal that the grandfather and the beautiful young lady Jill has put together for him, they discover that the gold rush was something that took place 40 years ago. Well, although the grandfather insists that there's still gold in his mine, that he's forgotten where it is, other than that, all the gold is gone, and the guys pretty much feel like they've made a pretty kind of a wasted trip.
They're just gonna go back.
They decide they're gonna spend the night there, and the next day they're gonna head back. Jill tells them there's plenty of room. They can all sleep in the bunkhouse along with grandfather. And she's like, if you don't mind it being a little crowded, if it gets a little crowded, there's an extra bed in my room. To which all the guys kind of like, what? And she's like, which we can drag out here.
And they all start beating up on the woman.
Yeah, on the one guy. What are you hitting me for? For thinking what we were thinking.
I love that. But yes, everybody, the entire audience goes, oh! And then, of course, she says, that we can pull out. I love that. But and then, you know, I love it. It cracked me up. And then suddenly, and I love it. I don't know if you picked up on this. I'm desperate to know if you did. All of a sudden, it becomes Snow White.
It does? Oh, I didn't think about it, but you're right.
There are six of them and the grandfather, seven dwarves.
Right.
They're all, and they're doing the Whistle While You Work song.
Yes, they are. In a very, at a fantastically choreographed routine as they get ready for bed.
It's almost a striptease. They all take off their clothes. Of course, they're all very, very dressed underneath.
Yes. You know? I love the fact that their shirts are their nightshirts.
Yes.
They just unroll them.
And, you know, crawl up into their beds. And then you have this whole thing where they each wake up and every one of them sits up and hits their head on the post across the bed over theirs. You have to watch it to understand, but it's drawn out, but it's funny because you keep waiting for it. You just wait for every one of them to do it.
During the night, apparently the grandfather went off and did a little sleepwalking. When he came back, he's got a bucket. In this bucket is a giant chunk of rock.
As they're sneaking out, they trip over this bucket and a huge chunk of rock falls out.
Yeah.
Isn't that a pretty stone? Yes, it is pretty. Look at all the lovely little yellow spangles. Wait a minute. This might be gold ore. Gold ore what? Oh, gold ore nothing. It looks like ore. There's English for you. It looks like ore. You can say either or neither nor, but looks like ore, that's plural. Where's your diphthong? Mind your own business. Explain this to me. Don't you understand? The ore I mean is a mineral. The one you think of is a conjunction. I know, like Clapham conjunction. That's a junction. Conjunction. Oh, when they stop you doing anything. That's injunction. There's a lot of junctions. No wonder the railways don't pay. I think this might be gold ore. That's what you said. Gold ore what? Tell me. I dare you tell me. Oh, with an E. What, you kneel on? That's a knee. A knee. An E. 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 Oh, with an E. E. Where's E? E's on the end. Not that end. On the end of the oar. Oh, what you row with? That's an oar. That's the man who went through the flood. That's Nor. Come here. Now, this is our gold. Here's a reef. Who's dead? No one. Reef, not reef. Oh. Now, you dig down deep until you come to a large piece of rock. Yeah, who digs? You dig. And what do? Walk about like a foreman? No. I dig too. Oh. Now, what are we digging for? ARP shelter. Oh. All the drains are stopped up? No, when we dig deep enough, we find the gold ore. I see it now. We dig down deep. Yes. Till we come to the rock. Yes. Then we find the gold ore that he's been there before us. Useless. Don't you understand? This might be real gold. Let's tell the boys.
Probably one of my favorite routines. I love the ore with an E.
Gold or what? Ore with an E. This is a great example, again, of what this movie is all about. These are clearly six stage performers that go up. They do sketch comedy. And you just are expected to just follow along with the dialogue. It's quick and it's quippy. That was so hard to say. It's quick and it's quippy. And you have to catch every word or you miss out on parts of it. And it makes it both really enjoyable and also very hard to follow. But when you catch it.
And it is also, it's very obvious that these six men are very used to working with each other. Yeah, very, very natural and play off each other really well. So none of it seems forced. None of it seems like a routine.
No. Well, and you get so much of it. There's a great line in it, and this is just a sample. There are so many lines like this, and every time I'd catch one, which is probably one line in four, I would laugh. But there's one point where he says, pull yourself to pieces instead of pull yourself together. And, you know, they go so fast and they go by so quickly that you just will miss them if you're not paying attention. So it's in a way, it's a movie that you really have to pay attention to or else you miss half of it.
Yep. Well, they take this rock along with them. And as they start heading back, they stop in a saloon, which they mistake. They see free meal, not realizing they actually have to pay for a beer in order to get the free meal. They're enjoying that. When the, when saloon owner shows up, and he's our resident baddie, Bill McGrew.
Yes, who's played by
Bernard Lee. This is James Bond's M.
I had no idea, but now that I know this, I have to go back and watch it again and every James Bond film because he was in like a half a dozen of them. And here he is as a young man.
Thing. Oh, I don't think if it wasn't pointed out to me, I would not have placed him in a million years.
No, I never would have known that. And everybody loves him. Honestly, I think that M is maybe my favorite character over James Bond. Don't shoot me for saying it.
Oh, no, I'm with you. He's fantastic.
He's so cool. But knowing now that that's him, and I mean, who else could have pulled him? Who could have done that except for Judi Dench? I mean,
that's true.
And to be fair, okay, everybody who loves the new James Bond, cover your ears right now. Cover your ears and hum. Do it.
I'm not going to do it. I don't like the new James Bond.
Daniel Craig is James Bond. But I love Judi Dench as M, and I love Bill McGrew as M.
Okay.
And I love Bernard Lee as M.
Okay, great. Back up the rabbit hole. Back up the Bernard Lee.
Thank you. I had to redo it just so I didn't sound like a drunk crazy. I'm not drunk, but I'm crazy.
No, it's absolutely fantastic to see him. He is probably in his whole early 30s maybe at this point. And if you're used to watching the James Bond films, you've seen him in his 40s or 50s. So, well, let's see. James Bond was somewhere in the 60s. So, yeah, he would be in his probably 50s or 60s, and he's 20s or 30s here.
And I have to go back and watch this movie again. Mm-hmm. I have to go back and watch just the parts with him in it.
Bernard Lee is Bill McGrew. He is our baddie in this film, and he is the typical sort of comedy bad guy here. You know, the boys, of course, don't have any money to pay for their beer and their meal. Yes, so of course they order beers. The guy's like, hey, can't have a free meal without a drink. So, but they're thinking, this is fantastic. Free food, free beer, what could be better? Well, that's when they bump into Bernard Lee here, the Bill McGrew. And he, of course, straightens him out that, no, they do have to pay for something. And they eventually end up showing the rock, the rock with all the gold ore. And of course, Bill McGrew takes a look at it, and you could.
I'm sorry, I have to ask, the gold or what?
I kept waiting for you, actually.
I know.
I was kind of like pausing afterwards, but he takes a look at that, and you can tell that he's thinking. The wheels are turning in his head.
Now let's have a look at it.
We'll just have one little look to settle for the drinks we have.
All right, it's a deal,
Charlie. Flash it. Hey, presto! Look at all those beautiful yellow lines. Why, it's a gold mine in itself.
That's not gold.
Not gold?
Looks like they caught me for a sucker, eh?
Oh, yeah, they certainly did. Gold?
Well, if it isn't gold, what are all those yellow stripes in it?
Well, that's a sort of mineral deposit. There's plenty of that around here, isn't there, Foxy?
Yeah, sure.
Where did you find it?
Red Gulch.
Red Gulch, eh? Well, sorry to disappoint you, boys, but no bad feelings. Have another drink. Come on, go and get a drink. Better luck next time.
Right. And quietly, the word gets around to everyone but the Wonder Boys, who are still enjoying their meal and their beer at the bar. And without them knowing, the entire bar sort of empties out.
And all of a sudden, they're alone by themselves in a bar, locked in.
Yeah.
And what do? They do what every red-blooded Brit would do. I don't really know. I don't know that many Brits. But they raid the bar.
They raid the bar. Absolutely.
That's what all of us would do if we're over 21.
I think at that point, they do discover that there's the crowd of people flowing through the streets heading out of town. They find themselves locked in the bar. They actually have to break the window in order to get through the doors. And they discover that everyone is heading to Red Gulch. Inadvertently, they started a brand new gold rush. And you know what? I'm sure there's probably a moment or two that might be worth talking about somewhere, in the rest of this film. But as far as the synopsis goes, I think I'm going to stop there. And you've even kind of said it before. There's so much that goes on so fast in this film, and it really picks up at that point.
It does. And that's where it just kicks in high gear. And all of a sudden, you actually have to watch to know what's going on, or else you kind of. And I want to say it's only like the last half hour or so of the movie.
Maybe 45. I think that about hits the halfway mark, honestly.
There are some fantastic visual gags in this. There's a point where they're doing a stage show. They get this huge rush on Red Gulch and they start doing a stage show, and they keep messing it up, but their upsets are so funny that the crowd that's watching is just cracking up over the upsets more than the actual play itself. I love that part. There are a few things that there's a great, great movie called That Lady in Ermine reminds me of that, where you just have these visual things that happen where you just go, for the time period, where did this come from? There's a moment where one of the guys is running away from the bad guys, and there's a backdrop, and you know it's a backdrop on the stage. Christopher's laughing because he knows. And there's a staircase painted on the backdrop, and there's a moment in the movie where he runs up the stairs in the painted backdrop. And
it's a fantastic little visual effect.
Such a gag. It's so great. And it's one of those scenes where you're watching this entire thing going, oh, this is something I've seen before. It's a chase scene. But then you have these funny moments where you're going, in 1939, this would have blown the audience's mind. They would have just gone, whoa, how did
Yeah, exactly.
That?
This was the moment that they'd be shocked. This would be the rolling in the aisle moment. I mean, that would be hysterical.
When the Mounties are riding in, I love the Mounties are riding in. They're all singing the Mountie song.
Yes.
Because of the law, we have record for always getting our man.
For the love of Mike, we got 10 minutes left. Hurry!
We're not going to fail, always getting our man.
We've only got 10 more minutes, and he rides off, and then the rest of them, they just keep marching along.
Yeah,
and
how do you like that? 1939 here in this film, and they're kind of breaking the fourth wall with that. I mean, they're doing almost the Mel Brooks. We've only got 10 minutes till the credits, I mean, kind of thing.
They do a fantastic job. So they're, especially, I think you said halfway through the movie, it picks up a lot. Up until that point, the gags are very, very verbal.
Yes.
You have so many one-liners. You have so many puns, so much funny stuff that if you're listening and really paying attention, you catch so many jokes. And even, you know, you just, anywhere that you're listening to this, you can't help but laugh. But then as you get to the halfway point, then you get a lot more of that kind of, you get drawn back into that era. So you get drawn back into the movie, and it becomes a little bit more stereotypical, but you also see some things where if you are a movie aficionado, which I don't claim to be, okay, I am, but you notice these things where back in that time period, it would have been innovative, it would have been interesting, it would have been just, it still is just hilarious to see these stereotypes that are so overdone that they're actually really funny.
Well, I did post a question on the Facebook page. We did not get as many responses as last month, but that's all right. That's all right. Hopefully, maybe next time. I asked.
Did I respond?
You did, as a matter of fact.
Oh my God! Yes, I actually. Sorry.
So I said that the folks in the film Frozen Limits come to the party 40 years late, and so the question is, what great event from 40 years ago would you like to have participated in?
I did.
Miss Lydia here says that. Woodstock would be high on her list.
Well, I think it would be high on most people's list.
Yeah, I think I would agree.
40 years ago is the time period. There are other eras that I would prefer to take part in. And next weekend I'll be taking part in the caveman era. Well, the weekend after next. But I think most people, given that limitation, would pick Woodstock.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you there. That would be quite the event to see and partake in. Certainly would want to be there myself. Anthony Chavez said about in 1974 he's in utero, but
Anthony, hi.
He would like to visit the Rumble in the Jungle and go see George Foreman versus Muhammad Ali.
Oh, I always say there's a rumble in my tumble when my tummy but sorry, Anthony, now you have a new visual.
Yeah. And he'd also like to take in an Elvis concert.
Oh, good call. That's a good one.
Yeah. In 1974, what stage was Elvis in 74, though?
Oh, heck if I know.
Yeah.
He died in 79, didn't he?
Yeah, I was going to say, would that be Vegas Fat Elvis by then, by 74?
Ouch. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, when he was younger. Rah-rah.
Yeah, well, you know, honestly though, I'd probably still go to a concert if I had the chance, I guess.
There were so many great bands back then. 40 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, 40 years.
Well, I actually said 40 plus years, so anything even older than that would have been fine too. I myself would love to have taken in something like one of the world's fairs.
Oh,
or,
yeah.
You know, even go all the way back to you're talking, you know, a century ago, the Great Expedition or something, or the Great Exposition, excuse me.
Thank you. I was going to say. Which one? Where?
What? Sorry.
Well, I'm a little bit biased. For my last birthday, my brother gave me a book called, he gave me two, I want to say. One was called Blackout and one was called All Clear, actually written by a lady here in Colorado. Fantastic books, you guys. This is not related to Orphan Entertainment at all. But if you're looking for some really good period novels, particularly pertaining to World War II, there's one called Blackout. There's one called All Clear. They are great science fiction, speculative novels. And it made me really curious about London during World War II. I think it's probably very close to being accurate. And, I 40 plus years, I want to say as horrible as the time it was and as tragic of a time as it was, I think that was the last, I don't want to say the last war where there were heroes. Obviously we have heroes every day, but that was a time where people were, many, many countries and many people shone through. So, 40 plus years ago, I would have to say maybe the end of World War II.
Okay.
I would love to have been there for VE Day and...
Absolutely. So I guess now is the time to give some ratings here. Lydia, how would you rate The Frozen Limits on our Othel scale?
I am a little torn on The Frozen Limits. There are some really positive things about this movie. When I first started watching it, I expected to be kind of bored. But as it went on and you catch the humor and the verbal jokes and the language, it went up on my scale. So I was inclined to give it 4 Othels. I think I'm going to give it a strong 3 Othels and a no.
Okay.
three and a half levels. But only because I know there are individuals in the world who may not appreciate the verbiage quite as much as I do. But you know what? If you're looking for a good classic comedy, this is a great movie to watch.
Okay.
How about you, Christopher?
I, like yourself, found it a little difficult to score. I think by the quality of the version that I watched made it a little bit more difficult for me to kind of grasp a lot of these one-liners. I knew there was stuff going on. I knew there was jokes going on. I had a hard time catching them all. But I knew they were there. You know, certainly talking to you, I even heard of a couple that I missed while watching the film.
I'm a language girl. I can't help it.
But, I mean, this is the kind of humor. I love this kind of humor. You know, I'm a huge, like, Abbott and Costello fan.
The intelligent intellectual humor.
Yeah. You know, I had a great time when we watched our Bing and Bob film, the Road Picture. So this humor just is right up my alley. I enjoy a good pun. So I think just out of fairness – because, you know, obviously, like I said, I'm sure I missed most of it, and out of fairness, though, I would probably give it a good 3. Yeah, like you said, it's not for everybody. And then also there is the issue that there is some accents. Some are thicker than others. I mean, I've been watching British television and movies for a long time, so the accents don't bother me as much as they I know they do some.
Yeah, we're kind of Anglophiles.
Yeah. I think maybe and then – And on top of that, we have accents, and then we have a couple of the guys have the one guy in particular has a rather bad. It's like his dentures kept getting in the way.
No, he has this. He talks like this.
Yes,
which is totally my funny talk when I want to like surprise people.
Yes,
I talk like this because I want to freak him out. He does that. It's actual. And I couldn't tell if he was putting it on to be funny.
No, I don't think so. I think that was probably bad dentures getting in the way.
So funny. And in a way, it makes his character memorable.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And when you catch what he's saying, when you catch what he's saying, if you can, it's really hilarious. It's really funny. For some reason, I must have been, you know, Marie von Trapp and her nun days when I picked that up. But,
So we're both pretty like-minded on this one then. So we're kind of
strong three, I would say. Yeah. And then possibly a 4 and a 0. I mean, a 3 and a 0.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, possibly a 3 and a 0. So, it's definitely worth watching. If you enjoyed And Then There Were None, this is a really good period. It's very contemporary to that movie. But obviously very, very different genre.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very.
It's unique, I think. I think it's unusual. There are, I want to say, only 2 female speaking parts in the entire film, as opopposed to, oh gosh, 8 or 9 strong male characters in this movie. So it's not a romance, which kind of threw me at first, but not intellectual, but you have to understand grammar. And I got to say it. I love the part where he says, I don't want to be masticated by Indians. Instead of massacred, he says
masticated. Yes.
There are moments in this movie where if you catch the word and you catch the right word at the right moment, it is really funny. So yeah, I think, you know, a strong, strong 3, possibly a 4. But definitely entertaining.
Yep. Okay. So, any closing thoughts? I think that pretty much covers it, I think, then.
I think that covers it.
Yeah, it does. Well, then that is going to do it. I want to thank all our listeners. I hope you continue to download episodes of Orphan Entertainment. Of course, subscribing to our iTunes feed is probably the easiest way to do that. And while you're there, please leave us a rating and a comment. That would be awesome. Yeah.
We love it.
Yep. And as we've said in the beginning of this podcast, come and visit us on our Facebook page. More activity we get there, the better, because you know we can spread the word even more and hopefully pull in more listeners. Well, and also a very special thanks to Derek Cook of Monster Kid Radio Podcast. He has played our promo, and that promo on that podcast has brought many listeners over to the Facebook page and to the podcast, so I really appreciate him running that.
Yes.
So anyway, so that is going to do it for us until next month. Lydia, thank you very much.
No, honestly, Christopher, it is always my pleasure.
You know, I have to admit, of all the films that we've covered and everything, we've yet to really hit a really, really big stinker. On purpose. except for On Purpose. Santa Claus, Carcass of Martians, you know.
Well, I mean, honestly, we're not the first ones to cover that.
No.
We knew it was bad.
Exactly. And we actually, you and I actually sort of came to the defense of Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, dear. But you know what? We are always open to new ideas. Any film that is not currently owned, currently embraced, please let us know, especially if you have a really great one that you love or that you hate that you'd love us to cover. Please let us know. We're always open to those ideas.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. And we will talk to you next month. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.